move from a place in life that's centered from the body and not from just this like singular approach of I'm in my head, I'm in my mind. What's my goal? What's my external focus? Like, no, how do I feel in this moment coming back to like a felt experience of being?
You're listening to the Octave Leap Podcast, a coherent vision for the future of business.
Welcome back to the Octave Leap Podcast for this episode called Remember to Breathe. And I'm sitting here with somebody who knows a lot about nervous system regulation, the importance of coming back into coherence, and the real linchpin for getting back into coherence, which of course is the breath. So I'd love to welcome to the show, Noah Sherwin. Noah, how are you doing today?
Doing great, brother. Really grateful to be here. Thank you for having me today.
Yes. I can tell you breathe deeply because your voice is very deep and resonant. Is that one of the perks of doing your breathwork practice?
It's funny. Like in the first year of doing this work, I actually noticed my voice drop a substantial amount. So I do think that there's a correlation between just deepening, deepening into your body, into your breath. And then within that, there's like a resting that kind of happens and the voice deepens. You deepen into your experience of being, everything kind of starts to coalesce into this, like a deeper experience of feeling.
Yeah. I think I started singing when I was about 16 years old, maybe 14. And, one of the things we were taught then is diaphragmatic breathing.
Yeah.
And I kind of got it at the time. Not really. And then I forgot when I was like working in an office and stuff. And now I'm like reconnecting the last 5 years or so, reconnecting to diaphragmatic breathing.
Yeah.
And it's such a different experience of life. Because when you breathe from the diaphragm, it literally expands the spine. It like massages out and unrestricts and moves any obstructions in the spine. It elongates the belly and the chest. And it's like, that is like, seriously, in 1 minute, like if your diaphragm is freed up, you can really like restore yourself to coherence.
Yeah. And the amazing thing about like proper diaphragmatic breathing, which is something that, by the way, most people aren't doing.
Most people talk from up here.
Yeah. Especially like in business and as an entrepreneur, like a lot of people, one of the most common things I see is this really chest heavy centric breathing. And when I often like invite people to breathe down into their belly, it just isn't available. So I have to a lot of times retrain people to come down back into this proper diaphragmatic breathing of deep belly up into the chest and then just letting it fall out. Because what that does is it actually creates like a literal, like a massage of the internal organs.
Yes.
So when we're breathing deep into the belly, the diaphragm is pressing down and it's actually expanding the organs out. It's expanding the belly out and it's changing our digestive function. It's changing the way our organs function. And if we're not doing that for, 26,000 breaths a day, then we're creating quite a bit of like dysfunction in our body and our way of being.
Absolutely. I've noticed, because I used to do a lot of energy work with people and it was done remotely. So it was mostly about facilitating a space for them to feel into their body. And I noticed that, and I noticed first to myself, but like blockages sort of come up like you're zipping up a zipper. And so I'd always ask people, my assessment would be sort of, okay, breathe energy and breath down the front line of your body. How far does it go before it feels stuck? And most people would say here or here, right? And this is like stress, anxiety. This is like emotional stuff. Solar plexus is like, if they're pushing too hard, sometimes it would get down to there, but like very few times people would be like, actually almost never, anyone coming to me for a session is like, yeah, I can breathe right down to my pelvic floor.
Yeah. Not common. And it's often not even something that's spoken about. Like it was really years for me until I even learned about what that meant.
Imagine we greeted people like that. Imagine like, it's like, instead of like, how are you doing today? Fine. Yeah, I'm fine. It's like, from here, it's like, how's your breathing today?
Yeah,
what is exactly. the quality of the depth of your breathing?
Can you feel it in your pelvic floor? Is it down low?
Are you breathing to your pelvic floor? No, actually, it's getting stuck on my solar plexus. Well, lie down.
Breathwork session on the spot.
I can see the motorbikes going by here. I don't care. This is more important.
We're doing some somatic release right now. Totally. Yeah, and it's a trip too, because it's like, once you realize that there's more than just this upper layer. So we actually have the three diaphragms. We have the root, like our pelvic floor. Mm-hmm. We have our main diaphragm, and then it goes all the way up into the vocal cords. So these three diaphragms actually connect together. And if those aren't moving in sequence, like we're not breathing all the way down into our main diaphragm and then up to our throat, we're actually not creating like a dynamism and flow and like the energy of the body. So that's what I talk about when I'm saying people are like breathing dysfunctionally. What I mean is they're not creating this consistent flow of breath throughout the whole body. And when that starts to happen, it's pretty amazing how life shifts, because that's where the root of basically all of our existence comes from, is from the breath. Is like, okay, how am I breathing into my body? Am I breathing down low? Am I just breathing into half of my body, half of my being? And that can create just like so much power and resilience and really like a deeper experience of coming into our body.
We're given no instruction on how to breathe in life.
None. And it's so bizarre to me too.
We're told about these like guys who lived a long time ago in other countries. Where like they spend like literally semesters at school teaching you that. They don't ever say like, what is the depth and quality of your breath like?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And it's like coming back to this root function of all of our being. And to me, it's so strange that like, yeah, we spend years in school learning about math and science, but what's the science of really our being and our body?
Well, what's the point of the math and the science if it's being used by people who are breathing from their chest?
Yeah.
what kind of world are we creating with all this? It's like literally, it's like somebody who's all blocked up.
Yep.
He's got a very powerful system in front of them, right? Whereas I see, like, if you're going to use math and science, it's like, and this is actually in the old days, in ancient Kemet, the universities there, they were temple universities, they were 40-year-long curriculum. It was equal about math, science, geometry, and astronomy, and music actually was one of the technical fields. The other side was self-knowledge. Mm. So you had to learn about yourself in tandem with learning about the exterior sort of sciences, which means, you know, that is why I think in the ancient world there is sort of an elegance and a perfection of geometry and a perfection of the way that things worked. And like you can kind of see that. Like you look at like pyramids, or you look at these temples and these carvings and stuff, and the architecture is just mind-blowing. In some cases, they found that the precision is like using 21st century instruments. And I think that is what happens when you have a society running on coherence.
Yes, totally. And it's like, all of that creation comes from like a deeper well, and it's an expression of where they were at in themselves.
Yes.
It's like you look around at, you know, I'm from the US, and you look around at the architecture, most of it, you know, with a few exceptions, and you can kind of see like there's not a lot of depthful inspiration.
It's pretty gray rectangle erected higher than the ones around it. Yeah. It's just like, as long as I can make this taller, I'm happy.
Exactly. It's going big, big, big.
Breathing with anxiety from my chest and designing more of these taller, boring buildings.
Yeah. And then you go to Europe, or you go to Egypt, and you see these really, really incredible structures of people that were actually like coming from a deeper place in their being. And really, breath is actually an ancient practice of consciously breathing and connected breath. And this isn't something, you know, new that I teach. It's something that's very ancient and something that we've actually disconnected from. So yeah. What I love is that now it's coming back into focus. Mm-hmm. Yoga was really like...
Yeah, pranayama.
Yeah, exactly.
That's ancient. Yep. And it's an ancient form of breath work, too, in Tibetan traditions as well.
Yep.
They have various different breath works. In, you know, the Sikh tradition, the Sufi tradition with Kundalini yoga, there's the breath of fire. It's like these different cultures, they really understood that the breath is sort of this, is fundamental to the body-brain coherence, essentially. It's really yes. Like, because it travels through the whole body. And, you know, of course, prana is carried on the breath, as they believe in many of the yogic traditions. So if you want to get prana into the body, it's done by directing the breath.
Yes, totally. And I love that, like the body-mind coherence piece. I think we're having like a big shift in consciousness as far as how people are viewing this body-mind connection, and actually that they're not separate anymore. So like I love breath work because what it does is it brings the two together in a really deep level. Mm-hmm. So we can do that through stuff like meditation too. We can do that through stuff like yoga. What I love about breathwork is it's a really direct access point to actually link the body and the mind so that, at least in the type of breathwork that I do, which is called a body-based approach, mm-hmm. we're able to like move the mind out of the way and actually let the body kind of lead. And within that, what happens is this really amazing deep body-mind connection. And that starts to develop more and more over time. And ultimately, what we're creating is a deeper sense of embodiment within that. So we're able to like lead and work and live and be in relationship and connection and move from a place in life that's centered from the body and not from just this like singular approach of I'm in my head, I'm in my mind. What's my goal? What's my external focus? Like, no, how do I feel in this moment coming back to like a felt experience of being?
The thing about the mind that's interesting, there's a couple of things that are interesting, but one is that it can live in realities that are divorced from the physical world. Mm-hmm. And that's usually what causes some degree of mental anguish or mental illness, is when the internal world, the mental world, is discontinuous with the world happening around us, right? And the mind's good at that. You know, the mind is made of this tiny fabric, this really refined fabric. So you can go out to other worlds. You know, you have people listening to music, it's like, wow, it's like traveling amongst the stars. You have like artists that are like, yeah, I'm like in a different dimension type of thing. But finding that ability, and even in more like ordinary cases, like even people like that are working during the day, they're staring at a screen, they're going into this like bot consciousness world of like the digital world. And then they have to remember that there's a human that needs to be fed and moved and breathed and all these other things that's kind of attached to that world, right? And we can kind of become very identified with these digital identities or these work identities or this whatever we're doing in our head.
So true. And yeah, really, that's one of the biggest things I work with people around is like people come to me in this space of I'm stuck, you know, I'm like feeling really overwhelmed. I don't know what to do. And my first kind of approach is like really just a check-in of are you connected to your body?
Yeah.
Like, what do you do on a daily basis that actually gets you to connect with your body? And most of the time what I see is that people just aren't consistently connecting to themselves. So the focus is on, okay, how do I create more externally so that I can feel safe inside, when really it kind of needs to be the other way around. Like, we need to create the safety and the stability and the kind of like capacity to be within our body. Mm-hmm. And that way, when we go out into the world, we're able to be there and we don't have to create this like perfect external world around us. Like, we're in a different level of stability within ourselves. So we're not getting constantly like rattled and shaken by all this external noise.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Because I think the noise can hook onto the mind.
Yes.
Right. Whereas if we're deep into the body just sort of knows how to move through the distractions. The distractions are getting louder, in case you haven't noticed. they're in more places now.
Yeah.
They just show up. Even living in Bali, you see things getting louder very quickly.
It's a good test. Yeah.
And it doesn't always, you know, you don't always pass the test. But you get up again and you try again. You get up again and you try again.
Yes.
Because we come from such a mind-driven society. And we're learning this process that's innate within each of us of embodiment and reclaiming the biological instrument that we inhabit. But there's not really a lot of information out there compared to the shiny, flashy stuff, like make money fast.
Yes.
You know, get laid with a dating app, like whatever that stuff is. Like, and it's there and it kind of appeals to these unmet childish needs that we have in us. Yeah. And it's like, oh, I can just be distracted and just get this like quick fix. Or I can actually do the work required to reclaim my inherent ability and actually like have a prime resonant frequency that's cohesive with the world around me.
Yes. And I mean, we're starving for that.
Yeah.
Like we, that, and that's why all of this shiny external stuff, you know, exists as an attempt to fill that.
Totally.
And like when we actually begin to connect to something that's deeper, we realize, oh, okay, like this is what I've been looking for. This is that thing that I've been kind of trying to fill. The thing is we're just not really like, we're not taught, again, coming back to our education and the basics around this, we're not taught to even go there. It's just not even something that is in the realm of awareness in most people's minds. And that's, I think, why when we get to this point of, okay, I've developed so much external success, why am I not happy?
Yeah.
Why do I not feel good? Like, why am I, I've done everything that they told me to do. Why do I not feel at home in my body, at home in my mind? What's the disconnect? And the disconnect often that I see is that people just haven't developed a practice of internal connection because we haven't been taught to. We haven't gotten this like basic ground level education of what it means to be embodied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could talk about even the physiology of embodiment because there's a physiological thing that happens. I mean, how many nerve pathways or highways go down the spine?
Yeah.
Right. And how locked up are people's spines?
Yes.
What is that reducing the conductivity of electrical signals heading from the brain down the spine to the various limbs and, you know, sub digits of our body? Or is that increasing it? Well, if it's blocked up, it's probably traffic jam. Similarly, the neuropeptides that go from the brain to the endpoints of the nervous system that basically goes into every nerve wiring from finger to toe to every part of us is carrying messages from the brain. So literally what we're thinking is being implanted into the body and reinforced in the body.
Yeah.
And so if we're thinking the wrong things, we can create more acidity, more tension, mm-hmm. more obstruction. But if our brains and bodies are in coherence, then the brain is reinforcing health in the body.
Yes. Yeah. And I mean, that's the thing is like, okay, are we able to even like have awareness around our thought processes and what's going on? Or are we just wrapped up in them and identified with them? And like, what's so amazing about breathwork specifically for me is that it's gotten me to like take a step back and develop enough what I call like, you know, interoception of this awareness of my internal landscape that I can see, okay, the way that I'm breathing is actually influenced by and influencing my thinking. So they're one and the same. And once I discover like, okay, maybe I'm thinking in a way that's causing me to breathe with a survival response, or vice versa, I'm breathing in a way that's causing me to think with a survival response. Mm-hmm. And I can actually shift that by like diving deeper and repatterning my breath around that. My whole life starts to change because I'm like, okay, I'm not in this constant survival mode anymore. And that's also just coming back to that, you know, what you spoke about of like these nerve signals and changing our brain chemistry and our nervous system chemistry. You know, that's like basically the work that I do is we're going and we're seeing what isn't alive, what isn't aligned within the body? How can we kind of recalibrate the endocrine system to function well with the breath? Yeah. So we're actually balancing our hormones as we breathe. So that's why I you know, talk about these deep pelvic floor all the way up to the main diaphragm and then all the way up to the vocal cords is because we're creating literally a connection between the endocrine system by the way that we breathe.
Yeah. I mean, you think about it, like what's the one hormone that a lot of men probably struggle with the most? I'm not talking about testosterone, but cortisol.
Yes.
You know, the stress hormone, right?
Yep.
It causes, if you're stressed out, you're going to pick up weight no matter what you're doing with your diet. You're going to have elevated blood pressure. It's going to cause a whole myriad of problems. You're not going to be able to think clear. You're not going to be able to sleep properly. It's going to break down muscle. Like it just keeps like,
yeah,
it keeps going. Right. But like when you can actively get into the endocrine system and repattern that just by breathing, you can take care of the root of the problem, which is at a chemical level, cortisol. And then everything else shifts. You sleep better. You know, you can have your ideal weight. Everything kind of comes into place from there.
Yeah. And I, you know, the piece around cortisol is really important because since breath work specifically has gained a lot of traction mm-hmm. in the mainstream, in like kind of more mind-based approaches like Wim Hof, we're looking at practices that really just kind of push that more. So we're actually just pushing the cortisol button more and kind of maxing out our bodies so we crash.
Really?
So like, yeah. And Wim Hof can be an amazing, you know, like a tool for like quick activation, you know, but the thing is in the West, we already have a lot of that. We already have a lot of pushing and strong and powerful activation. And a lot of people don't really need more of that. What they need to experience is like a deep rest and, you know, like the kind of non-sleep deep rest, which is a big part of what I do is getting people to like, yeah, you know, moving through what they need to move through in their body, like whether it's stuck emotion or energy or, you know, a disconnect in the endocrine system so that they can actually experience that deep rest mm-hmm. And then bring that into their daily life. And that's this regulatory piece, right? Like if we're able to activate when we need to, and then actually deactivate and relax and de-stress when we need to, that's what can create this like dynamism and power in life is we're not just operating at this high tone, like stress response all the time. We're actually able to come down. And that's super important because if we're going to do anything on a large level, we don't want to just max ourselves out and crash because then what's the point? You know, yeah. Like what are we doing this for? Like, are we sacrificing our health and our body for something that we maybe are pursuing in the name of this vision that we have, or can we do it from a place that's grounded and regulated?
It's interesting because I study, you know, neurology and brainwaves, for instance, mm-hmm. and, you know, the beta brainwave state is like the focused stress state. It's also like the state where like things are most dualistic. But as you kind of go down into alpha, it's like a relaxed focus and theta is like meditative hypnagogic state and delta is like, not many people can meditate in delta. Delta, like they're out. But like, people expect to be able to like get better sleep when they basically want to like disjointedly shift between being in beta all the time to basically delta. And that's not how it works. If you think about like 100 years ago when we walked or we did so many other activities that were outside of performance-based activities, we gardened. I mean, I think most Americans had a garden, like a food garden in their backyard.
Yeah.
Before World War II. So you're gardening, you're walking, you're reading books, you don't have television, you don't have stimulation. Your brain is naturally going through meditative states and relaxed states and focused states throughout the day. So you can see you have this contour of different brain waves that allows you to just go nicely into rest. Whereas nowadays, everything is high output.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's one thing I'll see is I'll talk to like clients or people that come in and have an issue with downshifting at night to have a good night's sleep. And the reason is because they've been conditioned into staying there. They've been conditioned into like going up and just staying there for the whole day because they don't actually give themselves that back window to like really come down because they've been conditioned to not do that.
Yeah.
It comes back to like a root of like a safety thing is we think that if we drop down into that rest and actually just let ourselves rest and let ourselves just chill out, that we're going to maybe lose something or we're not going to be as productive or we're not going to be able to build what we want, which is really ironic because it's actually that the reverse is true. We need that downshift in order to stay like sustainable in whatever we're doing.
If you want to build a purposeful business,
yeah,
like anybody can go out and make money. And this is one of the reasons maybe why I didn't make money as fast as I wanted to is because I wanted to build a purposeful business when I stepped out of the corporate world. Anybody can go and they can be like, okay, what's drop shipping and just figure it out. Mm-hmm. Or like, okay, e-commerce store, no problem. Like just, okay, what's the, you know, the typical way of looking at business is what's the gap in the market? I don't care what it is. I'm going to find that gap and exploit it and fill it and find that product market fit. And that's the whole system of business that we're taught. And that business is very mind-based. So if you're living out of the mind, you can be very successful in that way of operating without considering yourself at all.
Yeah.
Now, if you choose to do purposeful business, you will fail at it if you try to go with that approach.
Totally.
Because just exactly what you said, it requires you to downshift. And when you go through a dip in your business, it's a great time to reflect. It's a great time to actually tune in and say, okay, like I don't have to muscle harder. I don't have to muscle faster. I have to like really look at what's going on here and really like see, because there's always an opportunity and we have to be able to ride those waves. So we have to stay. It's harder.
Yeah.
To do a purposeful business in many ways, because it requires you to be in a more coherent state.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I still have to come back to that. Like if there is a time where I'm going through, maybe a down period in my business or I'm struggling, like typically the conditioning is to, okay, you know, let's go, let's push as hard as we can to get back to a point where everything is operating at like, you know, 110% functioning. But the thing is in that is the moment where we have to repattern so that when we are operating at that like higher level, we are able to stay with that regulatory way of being. So like developing the stillness and the ability to like stay with myself in the challenge and in the intensity is what actually creates more abundance, because I'm actually able to drop down into something that again, isn't this like external focus of like, how well am I doing on the outside? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I love that piece around just like the purposeful business and like kind of being in your why. Staying in your why is really hard. It's a lifelong, endless, infinite practice.
Well, if you pick like a holistic field, like being a embodiment and breathwork facilitator like yourself, the vocation you've chosen is naturally going to keep you a little bit there, staying in your why. And if you try to venture off from the why, you're going to get your wrist slapped pretty quickly.
That's the thing.
Know that from being,
yes,
from doing what I've done.
That's so true. I mean, like I tell people that because it's like you are as either a health practitioner or someone who's actually preaching embodiment and deeper connection to yourself, keeping yourself constantly accountable. And if you veer off, no one's going to trust you because you are your own best voice of, okay, like, am I actually doing this?
That's why I'm not a six-pack abs coach, man.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. It's like, yeah, learning finances from someone who's broke, or getting a personal coach who's overweight. Like, it's like the same framework of like, am I actually embodied in what I'm teaching? And
it's funny though, you go to some gyms and you see like the personal trainers and they're like, these guys are out of shape.
Would I actually hire them?
Wow. Like really? I guess they've like studied the thing, but like, oof.
And it's the same thing in the health world. Like a lot of people that are really deeply dysregulated that are teaching regulation.
There's an impetus to help others fix the problem that we should be addressing within ourselves. Exactly. I'm not kidding, man. It's like, it happens to all of us. It's like, I'd rather just help other people solve the problem so I can avoid it.
That's the coaching pandemic right now is just like most people that are coaching, there's a level of like deeper work that needs to happen to be able to offer that advice and feedback to people on a deeper level, because a lot of times I just see that it's not embodied.
No.
So and I think that's why we're having such a backlash right now, especially, you know, being in Bali where everyone and their dog is a coach and
they literally have a coach cafe. Exactly. And you go in there and you sign into the Wi-Fi and then you're getting ads to be a life coach.
Yeah. For 10 bucks a month.
For 10 bucks a month. So, I mean, like, I remember the commercials. They're running these commercials on like Facebook. It's like, hi, do you want to live the Bali lifestyle and just do whatever you want and travel where you want and have as much money as possible? Well, guess what? You can do that. You don't need any experience at all. Doesn't matter who you are. I'm going to show you in a 20-minute webinar how you can be a life coach. Basically saying, you can fix other people's lives. Doesn't matter who you are, what you know, what you've been through in 20 minutes on this webinar.
And, you know, it's like, it's funny because it's like, I would say that there's definitely benefit in like doing a deep container of, you know, if you go through a coaching program and you get that deeper work is really more than most people have done. So it's not like I think that's where it's like, okay, what's the level of deeper exploration that I'm willing to do? And then am I willing and able to come from that place when I'm working with people, not from this place of, you know, like a superiority.
Well, if you're sincere with where you're at.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, for instance, I'm very open and honest what I'm good at and what I'm not good at,
yeah.
you know? And then, but like when coaches are running around, they're 21 years old and like, I'm going to help you become your bestest and highest self. It's like, really?
Yeah.
You know, like I'm almost 40. I can do it for anyone. You just got to pay 7777. There's four sevens. That's 8,000. How many sessions? You get 3 Facebook lives. Wow. Okay, cool. That's yeah. a big claim there.
Yeah. And yeah. and it's funny too, because it's like, I think what I love
chest
about
breathing too.
Yeah. That was exactly what I was going to say. Is like the embodiment would be like the deepest focus that I would bring to someone that is doing that. Cause the real value that a lot of times people could really offer is shifting people into deeper embodiment. Like yeah. not just like, okay, like let's fix your life, but like, how, you know, like what actually does that even mean? Like, we need to go deeper than just like, what's your purpose? We need to go deeper than like, what's your why? Like, okay, why are you not embodying that? And like, how do we get to a point where we're coming from that place? And for me, like breath isn't a really amazing vehicle for that, because it gets us to like discover what's under the root and why we're maybe not connecting to that fully. Mm.
Well, what I do when I work with people is, like, I've created a system that blends human design, gene keys, and evolutionary astrology together. And it can answer very deep questions, and it gives people very aha on an intellectual level. So like a higher intellectual level, they get it. But it also begins to reshape their life afterwards. Because when the mind is on board with something, and actually it came up recently in a session with somebody, the guy needed like sincere, a good amount of embodiment. Like there's a lot of emotions that basically had been building up and he hadn't been facing, and he was only aware his nervous system was dysregulated. And so it came up in the session, but when I can read that in a reading and tell him this, and then his mind goes, okay, this is what I actually need. And he becomes one-pointed focus about that. His mind is already on board. And so he's not going to fight it when he takes the next step and actually does the practice. But the second step is always finding that embodiment. Now, it could happen the other way too, where people embody first and then their purpose becomes available. Some people need it in reverse, right? And true. So everybody's yep. a little bit different. But when the mind is on board, you have so much more of an easy time with the process, right? Because yeah. then it isn't like, oh, I skipped my breath work because I justified it. This. It's like, yeah. no, you've made this a mental priority
yeah.
to do your practice.
So true. Yeah. And it is a really important step to like get people clear on, is this a priority for you? And like, make sure that before they're doing that deeper work, like creating the structure and the framework so that there is enough awareness in the mind of this being a priority. Because if it's, yeah, you're right. If it's not, there's going to be this disconnect and they're not actually going to be able to come in and experience that fully, because there's going to be some kind of like, okay, I'm thinking about my job, or I'm just not prioritizing it as something that will actually shift me into a deeper sense of embodiment or being.
In the gene keys, there's literally like a placement in our lives between the age of 14 and 21 of how the mind, how we've learned in each person is different, how we've learned to override the body and the intuition with the mind. Yeah. There's literally a placement there. So you can actually know that for yourself in the specific way that your mind shuts your body and your emotions down. Mm-hmm. So when you know that and you're able to identify that pattern, this is why I think they work hand in hand, because you need the articulate language mm-hmm. hand in hand with the experience, the somatic experience of the thing.
Yes.
And when yeah. you have those two things, that's coherence, because then the mind's able to identify it and actually assign sort of a value to it. And the body can then conjure up the experience of it. And then you can actually align the two, and then you can repattern. Yep. So having that awareness is important, because what you probably will find, like with meditation, it's like people are very good in the session. They can like let go of stuff. When they say goodbye and they go back to their life, do they always shift, or do they go back to their old way of doing things pretty quickly? Right. Like the minute they crack open the laptop, you know, it's back into like e-commerce world or whatever they're doing, right? Or whatever empire they're building.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, like what you're saying around basically is like it all is coming back to this, creating this layer of safety. So it's like, if we're able to create this coherence of like, the mind is really on board with what's happening, then I think it starts to shift into life. And what I'll say too is like, this stuff is not like an overnight process. So I'd love to say like that you can come in and have everything shift in one breathwork session. Not that you can't have a ton of change happen, because you can, and there absolutely will be a deep level of like just something shifting fundamentally. Mm-hmm. But the real work is in like, okay, am I returning to this over and over again? Because it does happen in a deep and committed process, not when we're just doing it on the surface level. So it's like that coherence that we're talking about has to be developed and consistently like returned to again and again and again, so that when people walk away, right? Because at first, something might not shift. Actually, we might not have this deeper like awareness of, okay, I need to come back to my breath when I go to my laptop or whatever, or am I actually embodied in my experience of being outside of the breathwork session or the meditation or whatever it is. You know, for me, that was just the process of it just took time. And it was like continuing to come back to that within myself over and over again was the repatterning.
Yeah.
It was the thing that allowed me to bring that outside of the session and into my normal life.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I think breathwork is one of those things where you can give people a taste of coherence, like in a
short period of time. Yes.
And so they'll do a session, or, you know, even like I throw in a YouTube track, like that was one of the first ways I got in. I tried a YouTube track, like, oh, that works. And then I went to a holotropic breathwork 3-hour like extravaganza, and I'm like, I feel way different now.
Yes.
But, you know, to get those larger changes over time, it takes time to repattern the nervous system, right? Because that imprint of dysregulation has been reinforced and reinforced and reinforced by decades.
Yes.
Of, you know, you veer off and nobody in society tells you to look inward. No one in society is asking how you're breathing. And they're just assuming that you're doing the external thing that looks like everybody else. So there could be an internal schism that causes you to veer off, that causes this, and you don't notice it for decades. You know, I think they say by the age of 35 or so, that's when you start to notice if you have any like major health problems, because the regenerative processes in the body can't keep up if there's a backlog of degenerative processes happening.
Yes.
Right. So if you do have underlying symptoms or health issues, that they're more likely to arise after the age of 35. So you can get away with it for a while. And that's generally why people begin questioning this and begin sort of their health self-healing journey later in life than earlier in life. Because earlier in life, I mean, you can stay up drinking tequila till 7 a.m. go to work an hour later.
Yeah. I think, you know, it's part of it is like the blessing and the curse that I have personally is that I'm pretty sensitive, and I had to create a framework for myself earlier in life than I think some people have, you know, like just a more baseline level of a stronger, maybe constitution and resiliency. And then it shows up later.
Yeah.
I was kind of the reverse, where I had to do it earlier just because of the nature of whatever my constitution is. I don't know exactly why, genetics, whatever, but it forced me to make that a non-option.
Yeah.
That being said, like I really like to just make it clear to people, like, this is something that we are practicing whether we know it or not. So it's like, since we're breathing, you know, obviously 26,000 times a day or around there, like, we are actually practicing that way of breathing every single day of our lives. If we aren't shifting that on a fundamental level, if it's dysfunctional, we're continuing to like pattern that deeper and deeper and deeper. And then when we get to maybe a point in our lives where it all starts to show up, you know, if we get to the point where we're 35 or 40 or older, even. Yeah, exactly. We have these decades of conditioning of, okay, I've created this really, really rote and like grooved in pattern of being that's going to take a lot longer to shift. And can I start that earlier? You know, like
it doesn't take 30 years to repattern it.
It doesn't take 30 years to repattern it. I would say it can take a couple months. But there's a depth.
You got
to
do the marketing talk. It doesn't take 30 years, not even 20. No, not 10 years, not even 1 year. Are you mad?
You know, I like people ask me like, how long is it going to take? And it's different for everyone. Yeah. I would say it's like, there's a, there's a few month window where I know that there's going to be a significant level of shifting that's going to happen. So it's like, no matter who it is, no matter how long it's been, you know, I know that within like a few months, there's going to be this baseline level of shift that's going to happen. And I like to say it's like create, that's why I have this window of like, okay, I'm giving someone like a few months to kind of drop in and actually connect to their body outside of just a single session, you know, yeah. which can be really incredible. But like, if someone's looking for deeper and deeper change within their body, it's like giving them that window where there's enough time for this stuff to actually imprint and change within the body. Cause no matter how deep it's gone, people can connect them back to themselves pretty quickly. And once that starts to happen, then it's like, okay, just bringing it into life and bringing it into this pattern of being that's like different from what we've experienced for maybe, you know, the decades that we've been holding that way of functioning in the world.
I kind of visualize it like, you know, when they're drilling for oil.
Yeah.
If like, it's like shallow, it's like they drill. But then when they hit it, it's just like, it's gushing out.
Totally.
Right? It's like when we hit life force in the body, we're drilling yeah. through the conditioning. Yeah. We're drilling through the chronic buffer that we've established at a neurological level and a physiological level. And then we hit that well of life force and it springs forward. And then it's like, oh, there it is. Yeah. So it doesn't take, even though it might be a thick crust that's been established over decades, if we're sincere and we're focused and we're dedicated,
yeah,
the repattering can happen quickly if the tools are right.
Totally agree.
Yep. One thing I've been curious to ask you is like, can you just briefly talk about different types of breathing?
Yes.
Because like when we chatted about this too, you said like there's more yin approaches mm-hmm. and there's more yang approaches. And then you kind of take like a fluid in the middle approach. Mm-hmm. So I'd just like to hear what the benefits are or when you would prescribe sort of a more yin approach, yang approach, or balanced approach.
Sure. So yeah, as a baseline, like as a fundamental, I would say just looking at where the breath is sitting in the body is really important. So let's just kind of name the two areas of basically breath that are primarily just visible, which is into the stomach, into the chest. If we're looking at into the chest, what we're doing is we're kind of having more of a sympathetic, like basically a survival response activation, or just a deeper activation into energy, into flow, into power. And then into the belly is where more of this parasympathetic, like relaxation, rest and digest, that flow is happening. So there's a lot of different types of breath work right now. It's kind of like overwhelming. You know, we have rebirthing, we have holotropic, we have Wim Hof, we have pranayama. There's all of these different focuses that we can go into. The school that I come from kind of divides it into two frameworks. Of you basically have like a body-based approach or you have a mind-based approach. So you're focusing on either bringing breath and embodiment into the body by using the body, or you're using the mind to control the breath, which creates this, you know, like a desired effect. So you might do like a Wim Hof to activate really quickly. And that's not bad. That's just like for that specific setting and for that specific moment, maybe what you're needing is just a quick boost of energy.
So generally styles with like a breath retention, are those more mind-based?
You know, it depends. I would say breath retentions can happen voluntarily or involuntarily. So if there's a
stopwatch and a drill sergeant,
maybe yeah. it's tough, but yeah, I think it's like, you know, so yeah, obviously if you're looking at like a Wim Hof where you have like a very intentional breath hold, at the top and then you're doing like this longer exhale hold, what you're doing is very mind-based because you're having this specific way that, you know, you're doing 30 counts usually or 40 counts, and then you're doing, you know, maybe a minute hold, which is super specific. But maybe if someone lies down and they connect their breath for like an hour, the breath might just drop out in the middle of the session randomly with no awareness of what's happening. And then all of a sudden the breath will come back in. So that's called, you know, basically a involuntary retention. Hmm. And this can happen really at any time during the journey when the body's just like, okay, I have too much air. I don't I don't need this much oxygen. I'm good. And like when we're coming back to all these different frameworks and modalities of breath and the ways that we can breathe, and when we want to actually use those in each setting, that's why it's important to have a knowledge of what we're doing. So it's like, I might prescribe someone who isn't really breathing up into their chest and maybe is experiencing like some depression. I might prescribe them Wim Hof because I want them to actually experience that activation on a deeper level. The thing is, like, generally the clients that I work with are more activation heavy, and they're, you know, entrepreneurs, they're people who are pushing pretty hard. So my goal isn't really to get them more into that space. It's to bring them into like a deeper balance and rest. So that's why I'm like focusing on more of a yin or relaxed approach with them is actually the thing that's going to really shift the nervous system on a deeper level.
Right.
And a lot of times this just takes like a deeper level of awareness and time, because we have to come back to this, like, yeah, breathing deeper into the belly, which might not be available at first.
I don't know if you noticed, but I've been breathing deeper since this conversation started.
I can tell. I've been watching.
Sitting in your presence.
And just like, yeah, if we can find what the body needs, which is why for me, the practice that I do is so amazing, is because it's focused on, a one size fits no one approach. Like, everything is customized to that unique individual and person, which is why it makes it so powerful, is because, okay, we're not just doing this rote thing of like, we're doing 30 breaths, exhale, hold, because, you know, that's something that works for Wim really, really well, but it might not work for everyone.
Can I confess something?
Absolutely.
I do Wim Hof first thing in the morning.
Yeah.
There's a reason why. I've had trouble getting up in the morning for my whole life. Like, I'm just not an easy riser. But when I wake up and do that, it activates me immediately. And then I get sort of like the good chemistry in my body, and then I'll do a meditation after that.
Yes.
So it's like, for me, it primes me to do that. And I know it's a little bit extreme, but that's what I need to get going. I wouldn't do that in the evening.
Yeah.
No chance of that. Or in the afternoon, you know, but it does have its place. It's just probably not. I'm also a kind of person, even though I say I push hard a lot of the time, I actually like kind of go at a slower pace of life too.
Yeah.
So it's like, for me, it kind of is like, get off the couch, come on, get up there, start doing stuff. So it actually, it does help in some cases, but I've also tried yours, and yours is so deeply nourishing. I found that like in that session, I got so much rest.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's like, I didn't want to finish it. It was just like, oh, this is like, oh. Shavasana times 10.
Totally. Exactly. And that's kind of that's the goal, is like, how deep can we drop between that space of being awake and really asleep?
Yeah.
And like hang out there. Cause to get that kind of cortisol reset takes like 30 minutes of really deep rest. And yeah, coming back to the Wim Hof, I do Wim Hof too. I don't at all say this to, you know, down Wim or anything, because I actually think this can be a really powerful.
But I think you're drawing attention to this, it's not the be all end all, and it's not for everyone, and that there's a time and place for it, right?
Yes.
It's like the wrench. It's like a mechanic doesn't worship the wrench and only use the wrench when a screwdriver needs to be used, right?
Yeah. It's like we developed this toolkit, and you know, specifically to what you said too, like, I love what you said, like, you do Wim Hof and then maybe you have this meditative period.
Yeah.
So you actually are creating more of a bell curve for yourself, where you're going up and then you're coming down, and you're creating enough rest within that. I think my concern is in that I see a lot of, you know, the world of breath work is that, you know, people will get really activated. They'll go into that response and then they'll just get up and go about their day. And then they're toned to be really high. So they're not actually creating that deep rest and that balance within the body.
Right.
So that's kind of like, you know, I have a practice out right now that does that. You know, it's like we're doing basically spinal flex breathing, which is like a mind-based approach. And then we're doing box breath, which is really relaxing and also a mind-based approach. And the first one is more activating. The second one is more relaxing. And so we can experience both instead of it just being this like intense push, push, push. And then get up and go about your day.
Is that the free track you're giving away?
Yes.
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 So you guys want to try this because you've been listening to us talk about like breathing and embodiment, and it's probably been super, I've been very interested. It's probably exciting if you're listening to this, but like just a little like hint here. I did help Noah with some of his web stuff. So, you know, I have been kind of privy to the fact that he had a free giveaway, but yeah, he's got this dope track. You got to get it because it's like, he's giving away literally a free spinal flex and box breath.
Yeah.
It's recorded with your voice.
Yep.
Any other goodies in there?
Yeah. There's a video coming out for it soon.
Cool.
That's going to be posted as well. And yeah, the thing about it is it really, like for me, it encapsulates a little just taste of my work, is like, okay, we're creating energy, we're creating power. That's still there. And it's a huge part of what I do is like getting people into like this sense of power. I don't want to diminish that at all. I want people to feel that on a really deep level. But then how can we bring that power and that flow into like a state of relaxation? So it's like, that's where the real ahas happen, are like in this depth of like, okay, I was able to create the power, the intensity, and then on the back end, where am I able to actually bring that into my life of like, without burning myself out, without pushing so hard, without moving in a way that's going to deplete me, how can I still be powerful and also be rested, relaxed, regulated?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting because what I do in the morning is I wake up, I do Wim Hof, I do like meditation. It could go anywhere from like 15 to 35 minutes. And then I go for a long walk to like a cafe down the road to get like breakfast and stuff like that. So the actual, like there's contouring in that. Wim Hof is very activating. The meditation is very focused, but restful. And then the walk is just like restful and peaceful. And so it would be a different experience if I did Wim Hof and then like hopped on the laptop and started slamming it out. But I intentionally don't do that. To create that contour and that dynamic. And what I've noticed is there's such a difference in the clarity of thought, the clarity of emotional awareness in my body, being able to articulate things very clearly to people. It's night and day.
Yeah. And that's the thing. And what you said, like doing the Wim Hof and then jumping on the laptop is super common.
More productivity.
Yeah. Let's go. Let's push, push, push. And like, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's more like, what do we actually need? Like, is that really what we need right now?
Yeah.
Do we need to just get high off of our breath and then jump onto the laptop? Like, can be fun. And is there a way that can be balanced? Is there an approach? Like, you know, that's the thing is like, I see a lot of that in the breathwork world right now is like, essentially we're like using it as a way to kind of get high off the breath. And I don't think that's bad because it can be a blast. Like the breath is amazing and it's way better to do that than, you know, explore other means that aren't natural to get that same kind of
get
like,
high off PCP or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like, and it can be amazing because wow, I can explore this and access this using only my breath. Like there's an insane depth and like availability that's there in the breath. It's crazy. Like when you explore this on a deeper level, like, at least for me, the experience has just been like, wow, there are universes within me.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy. So like we can explore that and have that side of it, like these deep, big experiences, and that can be amazing and super potent and life-changing a lot of times. But, you know, if we're trying to create that like deeper, you know, repatterning in the nervous system of actually like living in a different way, it can be really helpful to step away from this like attachment to just having big experiences and come down into like, okay, like deeper rest, deeper stillness, depth of being. And those can be the things that actually create, ironically, the most potency in our experience being, because then we're living in a way that's like, oh, so vibrant and beautiful and really dynamic.
That's amazing, man.
Yeah.
You know, you really encapsulate the art form that you, and the science of it too, you know, you really encapsulate the art and science of breath work incredibly. And I think for anyone listening that's intrigued by what Noah's saying, definitely try out the Spinal Flex Box Breath Track.
Yes.
Because it's both energizing and relaxing. You know, it's kind of got this beautiful two sides of the coin thing. And it will give you a little taste of what he's talking about. You know, in that instant, and like the first time I tried breath work, I really understood. I'm like, oh my God, this is amazing. And then, of course, I somehow dismissed it mentally for like years.
Yeah.
Don't do that. But, you know, like you're also a pretty approachable guy too. Like people can reach out to you if they've got questions and that type of thing as well, right? About their personal situation. Because I think from what you're describing, I like the fact that you're long-term focused with it.
Yeah.
And everybody's different and that, you know, it's a one size fits no one.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think that can be very beneficial for people to hear because then it's like, it's completely tailored to what they need. So, I mean, are you open to that? If people like download your track and like they have questions, can they contact you?
100%.
Cool.
Yeah. And I'm also, you know, in the near future, I'm releasing like a short form 4-week course around, yeah, like exploring these topics deeper.
Yeah.
And creating, yeah, just like a baseline level of awareness around breath and embodiment. And I feel like that's going to be where some more value and experiences that's not going to be just like directly working with me too. Uh-huh. Just to get more of like a flavor of what I do. So I just wanted to put that out there as something that's available because, yeah, right now the track is an amazing way to get a taste. And then, okay, if people are wanting something a little bit deeper, that would be the next step.
Yeah. The nice thing too, yeah, is it's probably more accessible to get an on-demand course than it is to work with you one-on-one.
Yes.
Like if people, especially if people are like, I don't have the money or I don't fully know if this is the right thing for me. It's a great way to kind of say, okay, this is like a low risk way of taking that next step, which is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and I kind of like in the back of my mind, one of the reasons why I work with Noah is because like, I really wish I meet a breathwork instructor that's going to make this stuff. That'd be super cool. Someone who's really talented, maybe even put some music in the background.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, I'm kind of like scheming because I want that.
Yeah.
I want this course out there. I want this in the world because first of all, you're super talented. Second of all, you get it on many different levels. Like you don't go into one extreme too far or the other. And, you know, third of all, I think you could really do an amazing job at putting this course together. So I think when it's done, I'm probably going to be the first person.
Epic.
I'm going to be on like the pre-sale list, like number one guy.
Amazing. Thank you, brother.
I generally bring people on the show who like, I really dig what they do. It's kind of a prerequisite.
Yeah.
You know, so if they're on the show, I've probably tried what they're offering. And in Noah's case, I got to say I've done a breathwork session with him. He's got a fabulous little studio in Canggu. And he, you know, I just love his style, his guidance, the way that he holds space in the session. And so I'm super stoked for this course whenever it's out. And you guys should really try the track. It's a free taste of it. And, you know, you'll be able to get a sense of what Noah's offering in an actual experiential way and not just in the words. And check in now. Are you breathing deeper than you were an hour ago?
I'm always breathing deep.
Not you. And then. I'm always breathing deep.
I'm just kidding. I'm definitely not. I'm definitely not always breathing deep. I have to constantly come back to it over and over again.
Yeah. I mean, different things happen, right? Like I can imagine like, you know, if you're feeling anxious or something like that, like it still kind of pulls you out even, right?
Yes.
From time to time.
100%. Well, I mean, that's the thing is it's like, I'm human. Like I'm so not perfect and I
wait. Sorry, I thought you were perfect. I thought you were flawless. Cut.
Yeah. Let's shut down the podcast. It's over. I only have perfect people on my podcast. Yeah. That's been a big thing for me has been vulnerability. Like just sharing, okay, if I feel like shit, just being really, really, really real about it. And like, if I can be more vulnerable, that's actually what's needed. Is like just the deep vulnerability, man. Like there's so much fake out there and it's like coming back to what's real. So again, all this stuff that I teach is really like, it's not about being perfect. It's about creating just some more tools that can help us swim a little bit better.
Oh,
yeah. And like, there's a real depth in just like, you know, 10% easier.
Yeah.
Like, that is so potent when we can have 10% easier. And like, that's more than most people receive. So it's like, I still get dysregulated. I still get thrown out. I still get, overwhelmed and, you know, wake up feeling not great. And I have to come back to myself of like, what am I doing? What does my life look like right now? And it's like, this isn't about always being perfect. It's about how can I bring myself back when I get out of balance?
Right.
How fast can I do that?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well said. Very well said.
Thank you, brother.
Another thing too, is that's a real nugget there is being vulnerable like that. Mm-hmm. Literally, in human design, my life path is healing through honesty. Yeah. And it's like, it hasn't been the easiest thing to do to just like come clean, especially being a public personality in a way, you know, like when you run a podcast and all this kind of stuff, it's like, how much do you share with the world about your life and what you're going through?
Totally.
But then like, I had a little bit of a flip about 6 months ago around the time of my accident. I'm just like, you know, I'm just going to like lay it out there. And you know what? People love it. You know, it's like that is the biggest trust builder. And I think when we were talking a little bit about life coaches and, you know, life coaches get a lot of like flack thrown at them, but if they were a little bit more honest about where they're at, I don't think it would be a huge issue. If they said, hey, you know what? I figured out a couple things in life and I can figure out help people who are just a couple steps behind me on the path. You know, if they did that instead of like, I can be your bestest, highest self and pay me $20,000. Like,
yes.
Then I think, you know, it would feel a lot more authentic out there. And, you know, for some people listening, you might not be aware of this world, but when you're in the holistic world nowadays and everybody's on Instagram and, you know, you're in that sort of milieu and that's your echo chamber, it gets very overwhelming. Yeah. And then it kind of, you get numb to it in a way. It's just like, oh, another person with a transformational quote. Another person showing you their green smoothie and just like how amazing their life, like, just like, come on.
It's just not real too. It's like,
not real. Yeah. That's the problem. Cause if it was real, they wouldn't be doing that.
Right.
You know, people who actually live it don't have anything to prove.
That's the thing. And life is messy. It's like life is just messy. And it's like, it's no matter how much breath work or embodiment or meditation or yoga you do, it's going to be messy. Yeah. And it's like being okay with that. Like that's the work is like, can I be okay with the mundane messiness of life?
Well, I have noticed that a lot of embodiment coaches, they usually like let you know when like they're going through like rough stuff. And in fact, sometimes it's like too much information.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like the balance of the like, oversharing. Okay, all right, we don't need to be completely all the time honest about everything.
Hey guys, always. I'm just like checking with my reel today. I'm just letting you know I was vomiting and pooing liquid at the same time. It's just like, you want to see it? I've got it in a cup. It's like, no. Shut down Instagram. Zuckerberg, shut her down.
Oh, God. Yeah, I know. I have to tell people. I'm like, you know, I don't need to know everything all the time about your life. Like, that's not really vulnerability. That's just like TMI.
Yeah. Exactly. Your vulnerability still implies that you're tuned into the space that you're in.
Totally.
And I mean, who's actually tuned in on Instagram?
Yeah.
Like, no, what are you so tuning true. Into? Like, yeah. So, like, how do you tune into, like, is this okay? You don't know what the other person's doing on the other side of their phone, right?
No.
They could be eating dinner. It's like, this is a great meal. And then all of a sudden that comes out and they're like, fuck this burger.
So true. Yeah. And it's like, yeah, part of vulnerability is also like, I think respecting other people's boundaries too. It's like, are you actually like, are you just dumping something on someone or are you like sharing it in a way that's really, from the heart and real and not totally overwhelming?
Yeah. Well, I mean, the thing is like, are your words and the energy you're putting out there, you know, matching.
Yeah. And authentic and real.
Yeah, cause people are going to feel if they're not, you know, and you know, if you're kind of all tightened up and you know, how you doing? Good. You know, if you're in the office, you let that one slide, but like, you know, there's like something else going on. And then like, I usually go, how are you really doing?
Yeah. And people like, are going to feel
They take a minute. They usually look up and then it's like, what's going on?
Yeah.
Come on. It's okay. And then like they open up about it and then you're having a real conversation.
Yes. 100%. And people are going to feel how you feel. So it's like, that's the other thing is it does get reflected. Uh-huh. Like if we're in a state of really, you know, intense contraction or overwhelm, or we're not dealing with something on the root.
Yeah.
That'll be reflected. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, folks, this has been an amazing conversation on remembering to breathe because your life depends on it. So thank you, Noah, so much for joining. Make sure you go get yourself a copy of Noah's 15-minute spinal flex and box breath track. If you're interested in knowing more about your core wounding, your life purpose, and maybe a better alignment with prosperity in life, I've also got a special trifecta reading you can register for or learn more about in the description is, or the link is in the description below. Thank you very much for joining the Octave Leap podcast. We'll see each other next week.